This is Ted O'Connell, and this is the first half of the Neurology chapter from USMLE Step 2 Secrets, 5th edition. Question 1. In what common situation is a lumbar puncture contraindicated? With acute head trauma, intracranial hypertension, signs include papilledema, with coagulopathy, suspicion for intracranial hemorrhage, or suspicion for a spinal epidural abscess. You should do a lumbar tap only after you have a negative CT or MRI scan of the head in these settings. Otherwise, you may cause uncal herniation and death. Question 2. Cover all but the left-hand column and describe the classic findings of cerebrospinal fluid, or CSF, analysis in the following conditions. Normal CSF is clear in appearance, has 0 to 3 cells per millimeter. Glucose is 50 to 100 milligrams per deciliter. Protein is 20 to 45 milligrams per deciliter. And opening pressure is 100 to 200 millimeters of mercury. In bacterial meningitis, the appearance is clear, cloudy, or purulent. Cells, there are more than 1,000 PMNs per millimeter. Glucose is less than 50. Protein is around 100. And pressure is greater than 200 millimeters of mercury. In viral or aseptic meningitis, the appearance is clear. There are more than 100 cells per millimeter. Glucose is normal. Protein is normal to slightly increased, and pressure is normal to slightly increased. In pseudotumor cerebri, appearance is clear. Cells, glucose, and protein are all normal, and pressure is over 200 millimeters of mercury. In Guillain-Barré syndrome, the appearance is clear. There are 0 to 100 cells. Glucose is normal. Protein is over 100 milligrams per deciliter, and pressure is normal. In cerebral hemorrhage, the appearance is xanthochromia, bloody, or clear. Cells is red blood cells because it's bloody. Glucose is normal. Protein is over 45, and pressure is over 200 millimeters of mercury. In multiple sclerosis, the appearance is clear. Cells are normal to slightly increased. Glucose is normal. Protein is normal to slightly increased. And pressure is normal. Question 3. Give a classic case description of multiple sclerosis. Multiple sclerosis classically presents with an insidious onset of neurologic symptoms in white women aged 20 to 40 years with exacerbations and remissions. Common presentations include paresthesias and numbness, weakness, and clumsiness. Visual disturbances such as decreased vision and pain due to optic neuritis or diplopia due to cranial nerve involvement, gait disturbances, incontinence and urgency, and vertigo. Also look for emotional lability, other mental status changes, and worsening of symptoms with hot showers. Internuclear ophthalmoplegia, a disorder of conjugate gaze in which the affected eye shows impairment of adduction, and scanning speech, in which spoken words are broken up into separate syllables, separated by a noticeable pause, and sometimes with stress on the wrong syllable. Optic neuritis, which is unilateral vision loss, eye pain, and red color desaturation, are all classic. The patient may have a positive Babinski sign. The patient's symptoms do not follow a single neurologic lesion. Question 4. What is the most sensitive test for diagnosis of multiple sclerosis? How is it treated? MRI is the most sensitive diagnostic tool and shows demyelination plaques in the periventricular white matter. Also look for increased IgG oligoclonal bands and possibly myelin basic protein in the CSF. Treatment is not highly effective but includes interferon, glatiramer, metoxantrone, natalizumab, cyclophosphamide, and methotrexate. Acute exacerbations are treated with glucocorticoids. Question 5. Define Guillain-Barré syndrome. Guillain-Barré syndrome is a post-infectious autoimmune polyneuropathy. Look for a history of mild infection, especially upper respiratory infection, or immunization roughly 1 week before the onset of symmetric distal weakness or paralysis, with mild paresthesias that starts in the feet and legs with loss of deep tendon reflexes in affected areas. The hallmark of the disease is that motor function is often affected with intact or only minimally impaired sensation. As the ascending paralysis or weakness progresses, respiratory paralysis may occur. Watch carefully. Usually spirometry is done to follow inspiratory ability. Intubation may be required. Diagnosis is by clinical presentation. CSF is usually normal except for markedly increased protein. Nerve conduction velocities are slowed. The disease usually resolves spontaneously. Plasmapheresis for adults and intravenous immune globulin for children reduce the severity and length of disease. Do not use steroids. They no longer have a role in the treatment of Guillain-Barré syndrome. Question 6. What causes nerve conduction velocity to be slowed? Demyelination. Watch for Guillain-Barré syndrome and multiple sclerosis as causes. Question 7. What causes an EMG study to show fasciculations or fibrillations at rest? A lower motor neuron lesion, that is, a peripheral nerve problem. Question 8. What causes an EMG study with no muscle activity at rest and decreased amplitude of muscle contraction upon stimulation? Intrinsic muscle disease, such as muscular dystrophies, or inflammatory myopathies, such as polymyositis. You now know enough about EMG for the USMLE exam. Question 9. What is the most common cause of syncope? What other conditions should you consider? Vasovagal syncope is the most common cause and is classically seen after stress or fear. Arrhythmias and orthostatic hypotension are also common. Always remember to consider hypoglycemia as a cause. The other main categories to consider: 1, cardiac problems, such as arrhythmias, hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, valvular disease, and tamponade. Always check an EKG. Further testing with echocardiography or treadmill stress testing can be performed based upon the EKG findings and degree of suspicion. 2, neurologic disorders such as seizures, migraine headaches, brain tumor, and stroke. Consider an EEG or CT or MRI scan if the history suggests seizures or intracranial lesion. 3, vascular disease. Consider transient ischemic attacks or carotid stenosis, which can be ruled out with carotid artery duplex scanning, though this is not a common cause of syncope. 4, medication effects. For example, anticholinergic agents, beta blockers, narcotics, vasodilators, alpha agonists, and antipsychotics. As many as half of patients have syncope of unknown cause after a standard diagnostic evaluation. Question 10. Cover the right-hand column and localize the neurologic lesion for each of the following signs and symptoms: decreased or no reflexes, fasciculations, and atrophy. The area is a lower motor neuron disease or possibly a muscle problem. Hyperreflexia, clonus, and increased muscle tone is an upper motor neuron lesion in the cord or brain. Apathy, inattention, disinhibition, and labile affect is frontal lobes. Broca, or motor aphasia, is dominant frontal lobe. Wernicke, or sensory aphasia, is the dominant temporal lobe. Memory impairment, hyperaggression, and hypersexuality, temporal lobes. Inability to read, write, name, or do math is the dominant parietal lobe. Ignoring one side of the body and trouble with dressing is the non-dominant parietal lobe. Visual hallucinations or illusions is the occipital lobes. Cranial nerves 3 and 4 is the midbrain. Cranial nerves 5, 6, 7, and 8 is the pons. Cranial nerves 9, 10, 11, and 12 is the medulla. Ataxia, dysarthria, nystagmus, intention, tremor, dysmetria, and scanning speech is the cerebellum. Question 11. When evaluating a delirious or unconscious patient with no history of trauma, for what 3 common conditions should you think about giving empiric treatment? 1, hypoglycemia. give glucose. 2, opioid overdose, give naloxone. 3, thiamine deficiency, give thiamine before giving glucose in a suspected alcoholic. Other common causes are alcohol, illicit drugs, prescription drugs, diabetic ketoacidosis, stroke, and epilepsy or postictal state. Question 12. What are the classic differences between delirium and dementia? The onset in delirium is acute and dramatic. In dementia, it's chronic and insidious. Common causes of delirium include illness, toxins, and withdrawal. In dementia, it's Alzheimer's disease, multi-infarct dementia, and HIV or AIDS. Reversibility, delirium is usually reversible, but dementia is not usually. Attention is poor in delirium and is usually unaffected in dementia. And the arousal level fluctuates in delirium, but is normal in dementia. Question 13, what signs and symptoms do delirium and dementia have in common? Both may have hallucinations, illusions, delusions, memory impairment, which is usually global in delirium, whereas remote memory is spared in early dementia, orientation difficulties, an unawareness of time, place, and person, and sundowning, which is worse at night. However, a new pattern of sundowning should be presumed to be delirium. Question 14, define pseudo-dementia. Depression can cause some clinical signs and symptoms of dementia, classically in the elderly. This type of, quote, dementia is reversible with treatment. Step 2 questions will give you other signs and symptoms of depression, such as sadness, loss of a loved one, weight or appetite loss, suicidal ideation, poor sleep, or feelings of worthlessness. Question 15, what treatable causes of dementia must always be ruled out? B12 deficiency and hypothyroidism, for which the American Academy of Neurology recommends screening. Other treatable causes of dementia that you might consider screening for, but which do not have clear data to support or refute screening in all patients with dementia, include hyperhomocysteinemia, endocrine disorders, including thyroid and parathyroid, uremia, liver disease, hypercalcemia, syphilis, Lyme disease, brain tumors, and normal pressure hydrocephalus. Treatment of Parkinson's disease may reverse dementia if it is present. Question 16, define Wernicke encephalopathy and Korsakoff syndrome. What causes them? Thiamine deficiency, classically in alcoholics, causes the acute delirium of Wernicke encephalopathy, which results in ataxia, ophthalmoplegia, nystagmus, and confusion. If untreated, this acute encephalopathy may progress to Korsakoff syndrome, which is characterized by memory loss with confabulation. Because patients cannot remember, they make things up. Korsakoff syndrome is usually irreversible. Always give thiamine before glucose in an alcoholic to prevent precipitating Wernicke encephalopathy. Question 17. Differentiate among tension, cluster, and migraine headaches. How is each treated? Tension headaches are the most common. Look for a long history of headaches and stress, plus a feeling of tightness or stiffness, usually frontal or occipital and bilateral. Treat with stress reduction and acetaminophen or NSAIDs. Cluster headaches are unilateral, severe, and tender. They occur in clusters, for example, 3 in 1 week and then none for 2 months, and are usually accompanied by autonomic symptoms such as ptosis, lacrimation, rhinorrhea, and nasal congestion. Supplemental oxygen and subcutaneous sumatriptan are first-line therapy for acute attacks. Migraine headaches are classically associated with an aura, a peculiar sensation such as a noise or a flash of light that lets the patient know that an attack is about to start. Remember the mnemonic POUND, P for pulsatile quality, O for onset or duration of 4 to 72 hours, U for unilateral, N for nausea and vomiting, and D for disabling. Often, signs and symptoms also include photophobia, phonophobia, and a positive family history. Occasionally, neurologic symptoms are seen during attacks. Migraines usually begin between the ages of 10 and 30 years. Medications used for the acute treatment of migraine include NSAIDs, triptans, ergotamine, and antiemetics. Prophylaxis can be achieved with beta blockers, tricyclic antidepressants, topiramate, valproic acid, and calcium channel blockers. Question 18. How do you recognize a headache secondary to brain tumor or intracranial mass? By the presence of associated neurologic signs and symptoms of intracranial hypertension, including papilledema, nausea and vomiting, which may be projectile, and mental status changes or ataxia. The classic headache occurs every day and is worse in the morning. Watch for a headache that wakes the patient from sleep. Headaches from an intracranial mass get worse with a Valsalva maneuver, exertion, or sex. Get a CT or MRI scan of the head. Question 19. Define pseudotumor cerebri. How is it diagnosed and treated? Pseudotumor cerebri is a fairly benign condition that can mimic a tumor because both cause intracranial hypertension with papilledema and daily headaches that are classically worse in the morning and may be accompanied by nausea and vomiting. The difference, however, is that pseudotumor cerebri is usually found in young, obese females who are unlikely to have a brain tumor. Negative CT and MRI scans rule out a tumor or mass. The main worrisome sequela is vision loss. Treatment is supportive. Weight loss usually helps, and repeated lumbar punctures or a CSF shunt may be needed. Large doses of vitamin A, tetracyclines, and withdrawal from corticosteroids are possible causes of pseudotumor cerebri. Question 20. How do you recognize a headache due to meningitis? The adult patient has a fever, Brzezinski or Koenig sign, altered mental status, focal neurologic signs, seizures, vomiting, and positive CSF findings. The classic findings in bacterial meningitis are significantly elevated white blood cells, decreased glucose, protein around 100 milligrams per deciliter, and increased opening pressure if a lumbar tap is done. Photophobia is also common. Question 21. What causes the worst headache of a patient's life? This is a classic description for a subarachnoid hemorrhage. The most common causes are ruptured congenital perianeurysm or trauma. Look for blood around the brain or within sulci on a CT or MRI scan or grossly bloody CSF on lumbar puncture. Treatment is supportive. Aneurysms require surgical treatment to prevent rebleeding and death. Question 22. What are the common extracranial causes of headache? Eye pain, including optic neuritis, eye strain from refractive errors, iritis, or glaucoma. Middle ear pain from otitis media or mastoiditis. Sinus pain from sinusitis. Oral cavity pain, such as from a toothache. Herpes zoster infection with cranial nerve involvement. Or nonspecific headache, such as malaise from any illness, or maybe even studying for USMLE step 2. Question 23. What does a lesion of the first cranial nerve 1, cause? What exotic syndrome should you watch for clinically? Cranial nerve 1 lesions cause anosmia, an inability to smell. Watch for Kallmann syndrome, which is anosmia plus hypogonadism due to gonadotropin-releasing hormone deficiency. Question 24. True or false? Brain lesions can be localized based on the visual field defect. True. Remember this stuff from basic science? Review it again for at least one easy point on the USMLE step 2. There's a figure down below with defects in the visual fields. That's definitely worth looking at. If you really hate this stuff, at least remember bitemporal hemianopsia due to an optic chiasm lesion, usually caused by a pituitary tumor. So, with visual field defects, with right anopsia, monocular blindness, the location is the right optic nerve. For bitemporal hemianopsia, it's the optic chiasm. For left homonymous hemianopsia, it's the right optic tract. for left upper quadrant anopsia. It's the right optic radiations in the right temporal lobe. For left lower quadrant anopsia, it's the right optic radiations in the right parietal lobe. And for left homonymous hemianopsia with macular sparing, it's the right occipital lobe from a posterior cerebral artery occlusion. Question 25, how do you distinguish between a benign and serious cause of cranial nerve 3 deficit? With benign causes, such as hypertension and diabetes, of a cranial nerve 3 palsy, the pupil is normal in size and is reactive. No treatment is needed. With serious causes, such as an aneurysm, tumor, or uncal herniation, the pupil is dilated and non-reactive, or blown. Urgent diagnosis and treatment are required. Additional neurologic symptoms also indicate a serious cause. The first step in serious cases is to get a CT or MRI scan of the head. Careful observation is preferred in benign cases, but if the patient does not improve within a few months or does not have hypertension or diabetes, you should order a CT or MRI of the head just in case. Question 26. What does cranial nerve 5, the trigeminal nerve, innervate? What classic peripheral nerve disorder affects its function? Cranial nerve 5 innervates the muscles of mastication and facial sensation, including the afferent limb of the corneal reflex. Watch for trigeminal neuralgia, which is classically described as unilateral shooting pains in the face in older adults and often triggered by activity, such as brushing the teeth. This condition is best treated with anti-epilepsy medications, such as carbamazepine. If the patient is younger and female, or the symptoms are bilateral, consider multiple sclerosis and rule out other causes, such as tumor or stroke. Question 27, what structures does cranial nerve 7 innervate? What is the difference between an upper and lower motor neuron lesion of the facial nerve? Cranial nerve 7, the facial nerve, innervates the muscles of facial expression, taste in the anterior two-thirds of the tongue, skin of the external ear, lacrimal or salivary glands, except the parotid gland, and stapedius muscle. With an upper motor neuron lesion of cranial nerve 7, the forehead is spared on the affected side, and the cause is usually a stroke or tumor. With a lower motor neuron lesion, the forehead is involved on the affected side, and the cause is usually Bell palsy or tumor. Question 28. What problems, other than facial droop, affect patients with a cranial nerve 7 lesion? Patients may be unable to close their eyes. Give artificial tears to prevent corneal ulceration. Also watch for hyperacusis. Quiet noises sound extremely loud in Bell palsy due to stapedius muscle paralysis. Question 29. What rare tumor is a classic cause of lower motor neuron lesions of cranial nerve 7 and 8? Cerebellopontine angle tumors, such as acoustic neuroma, classically seen in patients with neurofibromatosis. Question 30. Describe the function of cranial nerve 8. What symptoms do lesions cause? Cranial nerve 8, the vestibulocochlear nerve, is needed for hearing and balance. Lesions can cause deafness, tinnitus, and/or vertigo. In children, think of meningitis as a cause. In adults, symptoms may be due to a toxin or medication, such as aspirin, aminoglycosides, loop diuretics, or cisplatin. It can also be due to infection, such as labyrinthitis, or to a tumor or stroke. Question 31. What does cranial nerve 9 innervate? What physical findings are associated with a lesion? Cranial nerve 9, the glossopharyngeal nerve, innervates the pharyngeal muscles and mucous membranes, the afferent limb of the gag reflex, the parotid gland, taste in the posterior third of the tongue, skin of the external ear, and the carotid body and sinus. With lesions due to stroke or tumor, look for a loss of gag reflex and loss of taste in the posterior third of the tongue. Question 32. Describe the function of cranial nerve 10. Specify the physical findings and causes of lesions. Cranial nerve 10 innervates muscles of the palate, pharynx, and larynx, the efferent limb of the gag reflex. taste buds in the base of the tongue, abdominal viscera, and skin of the external ear. Look for hoarseness, dysphagia, and loss of gag or cough reflex. Lesions are commonly due to stroke, but do not forget aortic aneurysms or tumors, especially apical pan-coast lung tumors, as a cause of recurrent laryngeal nerve palsy and hoarseness. Question 33. What muscles does cranial nerve 11 innervate? How do you know on which side the lesion is located? Cranial nerve 11, the spinal accessory nerve, innervates the sternocleidomastoid and trapezius muscles. Patients with cranial nerve 11 lesions have trouble turning their heads to the side opposite the lesion and have ipsilateral shoulder droop. Question 34. What does a lesion of cranial nerve 12 cause? Cranial nerve 12, the hypoglossal nerve, innervates the muscles of the tongue. A protruded tongue deviates to the same side as the lesion. That's the end of the first half of the neurology chapter.